This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Thursday morning to you. That means Throwback Thursday. Glad to Sports Grid for filling in for me while I was out yesterday on a personal matter. But glad to be back today. We got some NBA to get to. Golden State routing the Dallas Mavericks. But we saw this before, didn't we, guys? Come on, we saw this before. Dallas went to Phoenix, lost game one, lost game two, looked like they were out of that thing. And then they turned a switch, and they played very well in that series against the Suns, winning four of the last five to win that in seven. I don't know if that's going to happen here. Golden State's a better team. They look better. They play better. They got a lot of different people contributing, including Andrew Wiggins, who was fantastic last night on the defensive end of Luka Doncic. But I don't expect Dallas to shoot 36% in every game this series and miss 40-plus three-point shots. I think 37 was the total that they missed last night. I don't expect that to happen as the series progresses. But I do like this way the Golden State Warriors are playing. This is very reminiscent of a couple of years ago. You know, they took a nice little chunk of time off, got healed up, added some new pieces and some new faces, and now they're really enjoying another resurgence. And they're doing so. You know, remember when they were doing it without Kevin Durant, then they got Kevin Durant, now they don't have Kevin Durant. It's like, there's a lot of different ways Golden State has found a way to be a championship-level team, and they're back to being a championship-level team. So we're going to talk about that game last night. We'll also look ahead to tonight's game two in Miami between the Celtics and the Heat. I was very disappointed in the Celtics in game one. They played without Marcus Smart and Al Horford, but my God, what Jimmy Butler alone did to them in the third quarter is enough to make Udoka, you go back to the film room and look that one over. And everybody's yelling at everybody on the sidelines. It was a complete meltdown. Now, I don't expect that tonight, but they better be careful. This Heat team, and again, this is like a little cliche-ish, so please forgive me because you know how much I hate them. But they are playing with that chip on their shoulder. They really are. Like, you could tell in the second half that they were playing with that chip on their shoulder. Like, I don't really like it when people say nobody believes in us or we shock the world. They're the number one seed in the East. They have home court advantage in this series. But there is something about the way they're playing that made me think, like, they really are trying to prove a point to the NBA world. I know, it's a little cliche-ish, but it's the way I was seeing it. We get that coming up. Plus, Nick Saban's got some thoughts on NIL and Texas A&M next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is SportsMap Radio, and good Thursday to you. We're going back to 1999, because on this date, Star Wars The Phantom Menace was released. And I don't think this is hyperbole, Ron. This might be the most highly anticipated movie in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to, like, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I would say those were highly anticipated, no doubt, especially Return of the Jedi. I mean, if you left Empire Strikes Back, you probably were like, I got it. Where's the story going? Oh, my God. Han Solo's in carbonite. It's Darth Vader's Luke's father. What's going to happen now? Oh, my God. But this was different because nobody knew another Star Wars movie was going to come out for a long time. He kind of toyed with the idea, then it wasn't happening. And so years went by.
And the re-releases?
Yeah, then the re-releases came out and all of that. And all of a sudden it's like, what's happening here, right? Like, what's going on? And then he finally says, oh, I'm putting together the first three, the prequels. And everyone's like, what? The prequels? What, are you kidding me? Oh, awesome. So as they were developing, and then you realize, okay, May 19th, 1999, we're getting a release date. And I think anybody who had been part of Star Wars culture from the 70s and 80s, and even post that time where maybe caught it late or whatever, this became one of the most highly anticipated movies ever because of what it was going to bring. Now, I will say, I know people like to have some sort of Monday morning quarterback thoughts. This movie eventually, as well as the prequels, ended up being pretty hated by the Star Wars crowd.
Yeah.
But I was living in Las Vegas at the time, and I was working in radio, and I was working, you know, in sports radio, but we had an entertainment department and all of that. And we did a big feature on it. We had a big, you know, we had remotes around this thing and whatnot. And I'm going to tell you, just from the theater I was in on opening day with the radio station I was working at, nobody was ticked off at this movie on that particular night. I think that the hatred for this movie grew as more and more people started talking about it. And I think there was a factor here in its hatred down the road is that I don't care what you build and what you put on screen and what you write. I don't think anything George Lucas could have done could have lived up to the hype that the pre-hype of that movie.
Actually, the only thing I think that all nerdom, Star Wars nerdom, can agree on was that the lightsaber scene was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when saw the double lightsaber for the first time, you're like, that's a thing.
Double lightsaber, yeah. Double lightsaber. Why didn't we see that at all in the Star Wars movies?
Never a thing until then. Right? But no, I you know, I'm 100% with you. I mean, I remember standing in line, waiting to get in to see this movie. I know I saw it opening night. I think I saw a midnight showing. And I came out of the theater feeling like a kid. Like, that was fantastic. And as I have grown, or as I watched it more and more, I took the Star Wars goggles off.
Yeah.
And you started seeing all the holes in the plot and, you know, and then the Yippie becoming cringeworthy.
Yeah, Jar Jar Binks was a mess. And you know what? Here's the thing. Here's where Lucas made a mistake. It wasn't until later, like, where, like, people like me that were kids during the whole Star Wars Empire Strikes Back Return of the Jedi era, I didn't realize until later that Lucas had the merchandising rights, right? Like, I'm a kid. I don't know. You know, I don't know the business side of this thing. It's just a movie. And I bought the toys. I had the toys. And I had no idea Lucas had the merchandising rights. And he pretty much made billions of dollars off the merchandising rights. But by the time Phantom Menace came around, I knew where he got his money. Like, I knew how he got a lot of his money was by owning the rights to the toys and everything. So when you see Jar Jar Binks, you're like, oh, here he's at it again. He creates a character that's supposed to be funny, that's supposed to be somewhat cute to sell toys. Like he did with the Ewoks. Like, the Ewoks have no business being in Return of the Jedi. He's
just needed a
bear culture that could take on the Empire with logs and rocks and sticks. But the reason they're in there is because they're cute and cuddly and Widget's cute. And kids want an Ewok doll, and they're nice on Burger King glasses and everything like that. And you know, he's raking in the cash. And that's when people went, yep. As soon as they saw Jar Jar, they went, yeah, I know what he's doing here. I know what he's doing. And that was a little off-putting. But again, these movies got really criticized, got ripped. But I have to say, I remember 99. I remember people being pretty excited about them. And I don't remember people being that disappointed at the end of the movie. It was a little confusing. And there were moments that was like the pod race scene was a little long. But let's be honest, it was Star Wars, and I think people liked it. I think later on people went, yeah, these probably aren't that great. But nevertheless, that's our Throwback Thursday. So if you don't like Star Wars, this is an off day for you. But if you do like Star Wars, you can celebrate in the nostalgia of Throwback Thursday going back to 1999.
All right, we'll hear some, you know, some more music.
Yeah, we'll hear some more music, exactly.
To remind you of what the last year of the decade was.
Yeah.
Or the century.
All right. So I was off yesterday, and so I'm going to revisit this.
Well, first, you know what? Hey, let's apologize.
Okay.
Because we did get some feedback from people saying...
We did!
That, you know, we're sorry. I don't know if we prepped you ahead of time to say that, you know, we weren't doing a show yesterday. We had some personal issues to take care of, personal matters to take care of. But it's just a one-day thing, kids.
I am going to do a better job of on Twitter and telling you on the show if I have a day off plan. Now, some mornings we have technical problems. And then we have to go to plan B. Some mornings I'm just sick and we have to go to plan B, but I'll do my best to try to keep you all informed. But thank you all for the feedback on Twitter and Facebook and messages to the company.
That was
very nice. We're really, really touched by all of you who thought that we were just gone. You know, we're just gone. So I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. So I learned a lesson. I will do a better job on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Follow Ron at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's, of course.
Felt like Sally Field going, you really like
you
me.
You really like me. Yeah. So thank you guys for reaching out like that. But I will do a better job telling you. This was planned. I should have said something Tuesday. I knew well in advance I was going to need Wednesday morning off for a personal matter. And so I failed to tell you early. Thank you for letting me know, especially you, Rosemary, who reached out and said, "Is this are you guys on vacation or did they take you off the morning show on 1060? No, we're back. So no,
I mean, because things like that happen fast. That's the problem. Right? Like one day you're here, the next day you're gone. You're
That's
like,
very
what
true.
Happened? Business.
That's what happens in this crazy business. Yeah, one day you're there, you don't get a farewell tour. That's how usually it's
like the NFL.
It's not how this business works.
It's like the NFL. Once you're done, you're done.
Yeah,
we don't get the Major League Baseball like, let's visit every city and receive gifts.
That's so funny because there's this movie out with Robin Williams. You've probably seen it called 1 Hour Photo.
Yes.
He plays a creepy photo guy. It's not a comedy. He plays a really kind of a creepy guy. But there's a scene where he gets fired, right? He's being fired because they're catching him for stealing prints or whatever it is that he did. But the boss says, I'm going to let you finish out the week. And I'm like, finish out the week. I'm like, they actually let you do that at some places? Finish out the week? They let you go and you could still stay for a couple of days and handle their equipment and stuff like that? What are you, crazy? I don't know if that's a Hollywood thing or not, but I always found that every time I see that movie and I see that line, I kind of chuckle. Because that's not usually how it works. But yeah, thank you guys for reaching out. We really appreciate it. By the way, Ryan Ballingy is going to join us on the show today to talk PGA Championship. That's getting underway this morning. And listen, I hate to say this, but is the PGA on this morning on some channel somewhere on my cable? Because Tiger, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy are all playing at like 9 o'clock Eastern time. So in like 2 hours, they're going to be teeing off. Is there a place where I can see that? Like, I watch that in the studio here while that's going down. That is a fantastic pairing.
Yeah, it is.
I shouldn't say pairing because it's more of a three-way pairing. That's great. You know, here's the thing. Jordan Spieth, I mean, he's a mega star, right? He's a three-time major winner, looking for the career Grand Slam. Now he's not a kid anymore. I mean, he was a 20-year-old wonder kid on tour. He finished runner-up at the Masters when he was 20. He won it when he was 21. He won the U.S. Open when he was 21, and a couple of years later, the British Open. So I'm not trying to paint Jordan Spieth out as like a guy that's not familiar with these territories. But do you think even he looks at when he gets paired up with Tiger at a major and goes, oh, my God, yeah. He's probably done it before. I'm not, you know, I'm sure he's been in a Tiger pairing before. But do you think he still gets a little goose? I mean, this is the guy they've grew up wanting to be.
Yeah, that's why they got into golf.
Yeah. Like, it's very rare. It's sports is very rare. Because, and golf is one of the exceptions because of the longevity of one's career. Like, you don't – and, like, Tom Brady's the exception, right? Because Patrick Mahomes talked about, like, growing up watching Tom Brady. Rarely in sports do you get to play or be a participant with somebody you grew up with your whole life. Like, you're 5, you're watching golf, you're seeing a guy do something, and then you're 22, 23, 25, and you're peers with that individual. Like, Spieth is every chance of winning, probably a better chance of winning this thing than the guy he grew up idolizing. But I wonder if there's still a little butterflies. Like, man, I've played around the world, I've won majors, there isn't a golf course I don't feel like that can outmatch me, and yet, when I'm standing on this tee box and there's Tiger Woods, do you think there's still like, oh God, how did I get here? Pinch me.
It's got to be. You glance.
It's got to be, right?
All right, I got your answer for you. You can watch the main broadcast coverage, featured groups, or featured holes, number 16, 17, 18, on ESPN Plus.
Okay, so okay, got it. So ESPN Plus is.
But starting at 2 p.m., you can watch the actually 1 p.m. you can watch the PGA Championship with Joe Buck and Michael Collins.
Oh, yuck. Michael Collins, yes, he's very good. But Joe Buck, I thought we did this Joe Buck golf thing a while back.
Hey, but now he's ESPN's property, right?
Yeah, again, well, so they're going to use him somehow.
They're going to use him all over the place.
He didn't think that $10 million was free, did he?
Not just doing, for football.
Doing a couple of football games? Oh, no. Nope. We're sticking you on a golf telecast. We said this. I tell a quick story. When I was when I first got married, my wife and I were newlyweds. We were living in Las Vegas, and I was doing some high school play-by-play for the city, for the station I was working at. And I was doing basketball and football. And, you know, my wife just, you know, we were newlyweds. So everything I did, you know, she was, like, so excited for, you know, like, oh, my husband's done. And she was like, oh, you're so good. Ah. And I'm like, thank you. And she's like, yeah, you're so great. Oh, thank you. But I did baseball. And afterwards, she was like, that ain't your thing. Like, literally, like, not even a year into our marriage. I did a high school baseball game, and when we met up later, I was like, "How did I do?" She goes, yeah, that's not your thing." And I said, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Yeah, you kind of like didn't talk for a while, then you didn't know where the ball was." And I was like, "Oh, yeah." I was like, "Yeah, baseball isn't my thing." So at least she was honest about it. I thought we did that with Joe Buck, where we're like, "Dude, we love you in baseball. Man, you're great at baseball. You're fantastic at football. We love it."
Was it the U.S. Open?
But you did the U.S. Open for Fox, and
yeah.
That wasn't very – he wasn't very good at it.
No.
He just – that wasn't his thing.
Well, that whole thing was a mess, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. They had Greg Norman on it, and he butchered things, and that was –
That was the one that had the train that went through the golf course?
Right. Yeah.
Got to pause for the train right to cross.
So I thought we already had sort of a public referendum on Joe Buck's golf ability where we're like, dude, you can't be good at everything.
I don't know. I mean, I was watching this TV show called Domino Masters, and he narrates that.
Did he do a good job?
It's dominoes.
Oh, it's domino. What are you going to do? Right?
You know, just watching, you know, one little block hit another little block, and they're falling all over the place, and he's narrating the run of the domino.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. That sounds like something you do after a successful broadcasting career is ending.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think that's what just it was. Like,
you're telling your agent, I'll take any gig I possibly can get.
I mean, the TV show was on Fox, so maybe they're like, oh, he's leaving. Let's squeeze a little bit more money
squeeze a little bit more product out of him. All right. Well, listen, I mean, it didn't deter me from doing other baseball games and trying to get a little better. But, you know, I was glad somebody in my life was honest enough to go, yeah, you in that sport, maybe not as well as you thought it was going to be. I don't know if anybody's given Joe Buck that talk when it comes to golf. Maybe he just like, I'll keep going at it until I get it right, which is admirable, I guess. All right, coming up, Nick Saban's got some harsh words about NIL and Texas A&M and Deion Sanders. I thought those were buddies in those Affleck commercials. That's coming up on Wake Up Call on a Throwback Thursday.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, going back to 1999, The Phantom Menace debuting in theaters around the world. The first Star Wars prequel that was released. And now Star Wars is everywhere. Now you can't get enough of it, according to Disney. They love it. I don't know, man. I'm kind of.
They got to make that $4 billion back.
Which
I think they've already done.
They're like. They remind me of like, I don't know. Sometimes an overload of something is not a good thing. It's not like it's like, oh, do you like that sugar cereal? Well, you'll like this. It's got double the sugar. Like sometimes you're like, no, I don't need double the sugar. Yikes! Like it feels like Disney is like, oh, you like Star Wars? How about we blitz you with Star Wars content every single month until you can't, you know, because you can't get enough of this, right? And you're like, well, yeah, I kind of can.
I'm kind of feeling that way about Marvel.
Yeah, it's like slow
because
down.
I mean, it's all like it's all new movies, it's all new characters that you got to try to jump on board with and try to figure out. And I don't know, they're just releasing so much so quickly, I can't keep up.
Yeah, me either. Before we get to Nick Saban, I did want to say, the last night's game was pretty anticlimactic. I know that for me, it was like I thought it was gonna be a pretty decent game, but I didn't know it was gonna go that way. Like it was early in that contest, Dallas was going back and forth with them pretty good, and I thought, okay, I got it. This could be a good game that's back and forth. And then Golden State just went on this tear and just annihilated Dallas and. Luka Doncic is back to, okay, they're guarding him with a particular player that knows how to play feisty defense, and the other players can't step up, to be the other, to be somebody that Luka needs. Like Jalen Brunson didn't go fine. You're going to hold him to 20. I'll get 35 or anybody else. And it's back to the same thing that we talked about with this team in the Phoenix series. Now, luckily for Dallas, they're in this because they were, you know, they were in this. They won the Phoenix series. They're in this because they figured it out. But a lot of this is going to be more difficult because I think Golden State, because again of the guys that are on this team and the coach that they have who knows what these kind of moments are. Remember, Luka is still relatively young. He's like 22 years old and stuff, 23 years old. He's still a young guy. I know he's been in the league a little bit, but he's still a young guy. Steph, Draymond, Clay, and Steve Kerr, these guys have been through this before. They've been through. Hey, they were down 3-1 to Oklahoma City in 2016. Remember that? Everyone thought the Thunder were going to go to the finals. That was Thunder had Kevin Durant, and that's made Kevin Durant go, I'm out of here. I'm going to go join them. But they've been through this before, and I don't think they're going to take Dallas lightly. I don't think they're going to think Dallas is an easy team. I think they do understand what seven-game series are all about. They did it with Memphis, right? Memphis, they there were a couple of times where they didn't respect Memphis enough, and then Memphis bit them in the mouth, and then they went, okay, well, you know, let's go respect Memphis again. So much so that when the Grizzlies blew them out in Game 6, they weren't even worried so much about it, chalking it up to a bad game that got out of hand, a huge loss, yes, but a game that is still a series that's reasonable. And I think they'll do that when Dallas does forge its best attack. Miami is in the same boat. Miami had a third quarter for the ages the other night. I mean, a third quarter for the ages. Jimmy Butler, when are we going to start buzzing about Jimmy Butler in this postseason like we do with Luka, like we do with Jason Tatum, like we do with Steph Curry, like we do with anybody else that's played particularly well? Like, when are we going to do that with Jimmy Butler? I don't know yet. Right. But as I said at the top of the hour, and again, I don't mean this I hate cliches because I think they're crutches for guys like me. They're crutches. And I hate that. But I can't deny what I saw. And what I saw in the third quarter of Tuesday night's game one was a third quarter in which I felt like Miami was like, y'all think we're terrible, don't you? Y'all think we don't deserve the number one overall seed, don't you? You all think we kind of cakewalk through this thing and took advantage of some bad Philadelphia mistakes, right? It was more about Philly losing than us winning. And I just felt like they feel like they are disrespected. And again, and I don't like going down that angle because this is professional sports. This isn't a high school team where you do, you know, there's no rah-rah speeches, right? When you reach a certain level of athletics, there's no coach, you know, every now and then a Herb Brooks speech is nice, but you know, that's not why you win games. Right, you don't need your coach to give like a Newt Rockne level speech at the professional level. Like everyone knows what's at stake. Everyone knows what their assignment is. If you ask a professional athlete, I mean a serious veteran, in a game in which is, let's say a game is tied or you're down two or you're up two, it's like really close at halftime, would you rather the coach give a rah-rah Hollywood level like motivational speech, or would you rather the coach go, guys, this and this is not working. This and this is. Let's in the second half focus on this, this, and this. And actually, if we're going to change this and this and do this and that, they would take the latter. All right? They wouldn't take the former. They don't need rah-rah speeches. They don't need the nobody believes in us stuff. But I got the feeling like Eric Spoelstra dribbled that in a little bit at halftime in how he was going to break down and attack the Celtics. Because there was like no mercy on that team. They were annihilating Boston. And again, the Celtics are yelling at each other on the sidelines. And if you're Miami and you're seeing Marcus Smart dressed in street clothes, screaming at the Celtic bench, you're thinking game is over. Thanks. Thanks for playing. We'll see you in 2 days. That had to have been the feeling. So, good for the Miami Heat. But again, it ain't a series till the road team loses. I mean, the road team wins. I'm sorry. It isn't a series until the road team wins. And we haven't seen that yet because we haven't gone to Boston or Dallas yet. These first two games does say a lot about the winning team. I don't know if it means everything to the losing team. Nick Saban and NIL next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you could join us on a Throwback Thursday.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1999 on a Throwback Thursday. Is this Cher? Holy cow.
We got to have Cher on a Throwback Thursday.
I was
going to
say,
Thursday.
You got to have Cher. I don't think we've had a lot of Cher bumper music on this program
not really.
Over the years. I was going to say, I would know. Cher. She's still kicking around doing like concerts and stuff, do we know?
I think so.
I would want to say yes, but I'm not 100%
you know,
sure.
She will be one person. I mean, she doesn't, you know, she's probably not uber popular, but I don't think you'll ever see her do a casino.
No. Like, she definitely.
Unless it's in Vegas.
No, you're right. She's definitely Vegas show. She's definitely, like, she's got the nostalgia crowd.
Yeah.
She can definitely draw people who want to see her still.
You're not trying to get 1,000 people to show up for a concert so you can go gamble. No,
How old is she, though? She's been around since the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, how old is she?
She's got to be in her 70s at least, right?
Like, she was, I don't mean to say she was old, because I don't like calling, you know, I don't like saying women are old. It's not a right way to say it. But she was kind of up there in 99 when she did this song, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't she kind of like, look at Cher making a huge return to the charts 30 years after Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves, whatever it is. So, yeah, 99, Star Wars made its Phantom Menace theaters on this day.
Is 75.
75, that's not bad.
That's pretty good.
I would have thought close to 80.
Yeah.
Like 78, 79.
She's had some work done.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, so Nick Saban was speaking at a Birmingham sort of business leaders event. And let's just say this. I think Nick Saban was doing something very deliberate here. There's a lot of times these guys, they get in an event, like let's say they're at speaking at a luncheon or speaking in front of people at a golf tournament, or you know what I mean? They're around people who admire them and love them and want to support them. And they grab a microphone and they get a little careless with what they say. And Lord knows we're right here to catch you when you fall. Like, that's the way we work in this business. But Nick Saban, I think he's being deliberate here, because in front of these local business leaders at an event in Birmingham Wednesday night, here's what he told the audience. Quote, I mean, we are second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player, all right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future, because more and more people are doing it. It's tough. By the way, it's the best Nick Saban I got, so I tried. Okay, so what Nick Saban is saying is, like, hey, Texas A&M, they bought every player on the team, but we didn't. All right, we didn't buy one player, okay? I think this is a way sometimes where you are speaking about an issue without talking about it at a press conference where you're going to get kind of inundated. Maybe there's a few questions, and I don't know what the event was. But he went on to say that Alabama players made $3 million doing it the right way, quote, doing it the right way last year, and only 25 players were able to leverage NIL opportunities. Who is he talking to? Or it's not the business leaders. Let's make that clear. He's speaking to the business leaders, but he's not talking to the business leaders. Who is he talking to? Where is this message being delivered? Is it being delivered to Texas A&M? Because I'll tell you right now, Jimbo Fisher, I don't think could care less. I mean, Jimbo Fisher is a former Saban assistant, but I honestly think he has no care in the world. This is the new frontier, and they are on the forefront of this. Nothing Texas A&M did was illegal, by the way. And here's the thing. Think about the term Saban used, okay? What did Saban say about Texas A&M? They bought every player on their team. Now, is that new phraseology in name, image, and likeness? No, it is not. Bought every player on their team is a common sentence to say when you want to accuse somebody of doing something underhanded in the world of college athletics. It has been around for decades. Decades. Now, you would say this to accuse your opponent of cheating. But Saban is not accusing Texas A&M of cheating at all. No, that's not what he's doing. Because Texas A&M is not cheating. So is he directing this at Texas A&M? I don't think so. Is he directing it at the business leaders of Alabama? Well, think about this. If you go hand in hat, or hat in hand, I should say, to the business leaders in Birmingham, and you, without asking, you set up a sort of image that Texas A&M is buying everybody on the team. They're making deals for players, name, image, likeness. Now, we didn't do that. And then he goes on to say that it keeps occurring. It's going to be keeping occurring. And it's tough. It's getting really tough. So is he sending something out to the business leaders like, I could use your help? I don't know. It just, I don't think it's uncalculated here. Again, plenty of coaches, school presidents, athletes. I mean, I'm trying to think of a bunch of people. They all flub up sometimes at these kind of events. Right? They get the microphone, they chat. Somewhere in the back of their mind, they know that somehow this is going to get to the news, but they're okay. They're just like, ah, yeah. And that school, and that's, you know, kind of Spurrier used to do this too, where he would just kind of slyly imply that schools were cheating, you know, whatnot. But I think Saban is using this opportunity to point out, hey, we're heading down a really weird path here, and it doesn't look like there's any control. So he also took a shot at Jackson State, which is the school in the program that is headed by Deion Sanders. Now, remember, Ron, Deion is Coach Prime in the Affleck commercials.
Yes, he is.
Right? Where Saban, I think Saban even gives Coach Prime a necklace, an Affleck diamond-studded necklace. And then he gives him like a suitcase, and the duck opens it up and goes, ah! They're like commercial buddies. And Saban said, quote, hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to the school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys at Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. Hold on. Again, these aren't illegal. The school can't pay for it. So when he says Jackson State paid a guy $1 million, that's not really correct, right? It's more correct that through an agency, through a business entity, he's getting $1 million through them. He's not getting it through the school. I just want to make that accusation and accuse the school of writing the check. There's not going to be any paper trail on the school paying a kid, but they will be a booster paying a kid. That's basically what it means. But I'm wondering how calculated this is and what he's trying to do with this.
I would imagine everything's calculated for Nick. I mean, he's been in this game long enough to know not to just run his mouth.
So again, I think there's two things he's trying to do with this. One, he's either trying to say, hey, you know what? I wouldn't mind if that happened here, but I don't want to support it. Two, I really want to speak out about this in a way that doesn't make me look like I'm the Grinch that stole NIL Christmas. Because we've talked about this a number of times. I think if you're a coach now in college athletics, basketball, football, you know, the money sports where you're going to get some really nice NIL recruits, you have to walk a fine line with this. Because I understand coaches when they say this is crazy. Because it is crazy. I support the craziness, by the way. I'm all for these athletes getting what they can for their name, image, and likeness. I've seen the exploitation for too many years. But I understand the wild, wild west nature of this is insane. Because we've always loved recruiting. I shouldn't say we. Some of us don't really care for it. But I'm just putting the we in the general sports culture in this country. I mean, National Signing Day is still a very, very big deal. There's a lot more people
putting their toes in the water when it comes to websites grading out high school players. And I've said this is the more websites they're out there, the more fans have access to tape, the more fans have access to players and what they did and who they are and whatnot, the less a coach has the power in the situation of being able to say, we've got a really great recruiting class, trust me. Now coaches are being asked by their school presidents, why are we finishing 13th in the recruiting rankings? And they're like, well, I'm sorry, school president, this is not in your wheelhouse, but it's a lot more complicated than you think. And the president's like, yeah, I know, I don't really know a lot about this, but all I know is I'm hearing it from people all the time. So can you please explain why we're 13th? Right? Like, it makes it like really harder, you know, like a headache a coach doesn't need. This makes it harder. If you're Saban, you want to speak out about this. Like, hey, we need some regulation here. Like, this can't keep happening, right? Like, this is not working. The comment he made about parity. Like, we can't have three schools paying for all the top players. Like that's not going to work. It's not a system that's going to be satisfactory, right? But at the same time, he doesn't want to appear as the coach that's like, you come to Alabama, you can just forget about them NIL deals, okay? Like, you can forget about it. Like, he doesn't want to be a coach like that, where he hates this so much that if you're making $1 million at Alabama, he's like, nah, I don't like this. His players did make money. I mean, don't get me wrong. He did point this out. So I want to make this clear. It's not like you can't make money at Alabama with NIL deals. He said that 25 players were able to leverage NIL opportunities on his team. That in total, about $3 million were made by Alabama players. That's pretty good. You know, that's pretty good. It's not, you know, it's not going to be Arch Manning money. I'll tell you that right now. But yeah, that's still decent enough. But he wants to speak out about this, but he doesn't want to appear to recruits that he's got a serious problem with this. So I think he's dancing on a kind of a wire here. But he's calculated. You're right, Ron. He's calculated on this. This isn't a throwaway thing he did at a Birmingham event where he was hoping nobody would catch. I think he had every willingness to have this caught and discussed and brought up. And I think it's pretty smart on him, depending on what exactly he's talking to. I don't think he's talking to Texas A&M, because I know Texas A&M is going to say we didn't do anything wrong. So sorry, Nick, but you know, you can take that and do whatever you want with that, but it's not going to affect us whatsoever. But just me personally, if anybody else has a thought on this, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, especially those of you who listen to us in Alabama, is he speaking to the Birmingham leaders saying like, oh, you know, it's going to get tougher down the road. And these Birmingham business leaders are like, you know, we got to help coach out.
Yeah.
Let's up the game. You know,
I mean, because it's hard. I know he's throwing shade at some programs without naming programs. You know, type of thing. Like, you know, it's. I mean, I feel like we did this not too recently, but like Dabo Sweeney.
Yeah, Dabo Sweeney was doing the same thing. He's like, this is not good. I don't like this.
But, you know, if they are able to get that financial backing from the community,
yeah,
then it becomes okay.
And I don't know if you're allowed to directly tell a recruit.
Yeah.
I mean, a sponsor, I should say, to pay a player. I don't know if that's. Like, I don't think Saban can go up to John's Barbecue or Dreamland Barbecue or whatever and go, hey, would you mind giving, we got a kid, he's going to be the next Bryce Young, would you mind dumping six figures at him? We'd really appreciate it.
Yep.
Like, I don't think he's allowed to do that.
We'll make but it worth your while.
He can get in front of business leaders and go, well, Texas A&M, I mean, they're paying players. Man, we did it. We get $3 million is nice, you know, but
We're trying to do it the old-fashioned way, but this old-fashioned way is going to pass us by very quickly.
Exactly. It's just going to get harder and harder.
Just saying, folks.
Yeah. It's like when somebody wants to borrow money from you, they don't ask if they can borrow money. They just tell you how hard their life is. Like, yeah, these medical bills just keep piling up.
Yeah, because, I mean, Nick Saban has owned a monopoly.
Yeah.
Just being a football vocational school.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's sitting there thinking,
But now with money in play, it's going to be a lot harder for him to convince a recruit saying, hey, you want to play in the NFL? Come here.
Yeah, no doubt.
Where the recruit goes, I can go get $5 million today.
Uh-huh. Exactly. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in hour number two, Ryan Ballingy is going to join us. We love Ryan. He's going to join us to talk about the PGA. It's going to go on today at Southern Hills. You know what I did yesterday? Yesterday afternoon, I went on YouTube, and I watched a flyover of Southern Hills golf. Because remember I told you, I remember Tiger winning at Southern Hills, but I remember one hole. Like, I don't remember what one hole looks like.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even remember that course. So Golf Digest videos have, like, they take courses and they do these, like, drone flyovers. Oh, they're great. And there's a narrator guy who tells you, like, the history of the hole. So Southern Hills in Tulsa, little interesting fact. This is something you don't get on a lot of other radio shows, people, so be appreciative. Southern Hills was created during the Great Depression. And it was a golf course that was built by out-of-work, you know, laborers who made 25 cents an hour. And that's how Southern Hills came to existence. And they recently redesigned it to bring back its sort of Great Depression 1930s era look and feel to the bunkers. That's what you can see this week at the PGA Southern Hills. Tough golf course, but scoring should still be in the double digits. Wake Up Call continues. Sports Map Radio.